Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our London studios for this week's edition of The Ruck. Thank you for following us and downloading us in such great numbers. Hope you're enjoying it. This week, there is a Ruck special, as well as the one that you're listening to now. There'll be one later in the week. I'll give you more details, but it will be very special. It'll be a one-on-one with one of the most influential and shortest journalists in the game. First of all, we really beefed up the panel. In fact, packed it almost full with Olympic athletes. Well, we got one Olympic athlete and two non-Olympic athletes. In fact, two non-athletes. Welcome to Martin Gillingham, Martin's first appearance. Martin, I hope I got my games right. You ran the 400 metres hurdles for GB in the LA Olympics.
I did.
And also the World Championships.
Yes, very slowly.
Which was your finest race of your career?
Finest race, Crystal Palace, which where I know my friend here, Mr. Barnes, has also run and won. 1987.
What?
Edwin Moses was first, Chris Akabusi was second, I was third, and the subsequent Olympic champion, Andre Phillips, the year later, who ended the long run of Ed Moses, was fourth.
Yeah, and was that
but
your
at the
personal,
end of the day, I wasn't good enough.
Was that your personal best?
Yeah.
What sort of experience was it to running against Ed Moses? Was it daunting?
Humiliating.
That's a good line.
On a repeated basis. No, I ran against him quite a few times and never, to be honest, got terribly close.
Was he a decent bloke? Or just
not really.
Okay, right.
I sat next to him in the call room in Rome for about half an hour. He didn't say a word.
Right, okay. We hate Ed Moses, okay? That's going to be one of the Ruck's mantras from now on. The bloody Ed Moses. Geek. Okay. We're also in the company. This just to go back to Martin's journalistic side, which is vast. He's been a TV commentator for a long time. One of the best, in my opinion, and journalist.
Don't humiliate me. I'm just happy to be here. I'm a fan. I listen to this.
Yeah.
And I feel like a kid who's just walking onto the set of Blue Peter.
Okay, fair enough.
All you those are good. My
Valerie Singleton. Oh, fantastic attempt at flattery.
Where's Petra the dog then? This is Blue Peter and John Noakes. All I say is that he's commentated for more satellite televisions than there are satellites, I think. In fact, was it Yuri Gagarin who put the first satellite up when you joined satellite television?
It was Yuri, yeah.
Okay.
Mark, listen to this. I'm going to read out the second bit of Gillingham's email address. It is olympian.org. Have you ever heard anything like that? Olympian.org.
Please, don't do that.
No, that's terrible.
I got given it.
Okay, Olympian. We've got a real Scotsman on the panel. Not on the phone. Not an allegedly real Scotsman. We've got a real Scotsman from real Scotland up in the far north. Stornoway?
That's right, yeah.
And, good man, that is north. How long did it take you to get from Stornoway to civilization when you first... when you first were born?
There's aircraft now, Steve, so okay. an hour to Glasgow, right. Or a nice little ferry into Liverpool and down to Inverness, so yes.
Okay, and we'll whisper this quietly, but basically you came from a football background, Mark?
That's correct,
journalism.
Yeah.
And what were the teams that you loved and what were the teams you covered?
Well, growing up in the north of Scotland, it was around the time of the rise of Inverness, Cowley, Thistle, and the fractious merger that has now led to them becoming, well, a minor, modest force in the game. They relegated last season, and Ross County as well, but we don't like to give them too many name checks.
Of course. Mark's our Scottish rugby correspondent, and never forget with the Sunday Times, we give you lots of coverage in every country, Scotland, Ireland, Wales and England, and we spend a lot of time on it, Barnsley, and it's out there and it's online if you want to read it. Also, I think I gave away something there when I said Barnsley, because we have with us today Stuart Barnes, a doyen of summarisers and a Judas amongst men. Now, Barnsley's recently arrived on Twitter, and blimey, we all waited for something to hit the fan, because his normal, aggressive, ebullient, know-all self. But Barnsley, unbelievably, you were weak as a little baby kitten on there. You've not fallen out with anyone. No. You've not been blocked.
I haven't blocked anyone.
Oh, well, that's terrible.
No, I'm sort of following New Testament philosophy here, Steve. I leave you to the Old Testament. Let's go and butcher them. I sort of have that Jesus thing about, you know, follow me and it'll all be okay at the end of the day.
Right, he's got a religion, something's happening now. We're just at the end of the fifth pool round of the Heineken Cup and the European Challenge Cup. All good stuff, all controversial, some great rugby. Just, Martin, you spend a lot of time in France, you'd know it like the back of your hand, you know their rugby. One or two of the French teams are playing well. Also, there seems to be some players coming through. Seems to be a bit of an urgency over there. Is something rising from 10 years of underachievement, or am I being over-optimistic?
No, I think it started last June when they won the World Under 20 title. They've always sent star-laden teams to that competition but never done anything. But last year on home territory in the final in Béziers, they beat England. And a couple of the players who featured in that have been included in the new squad for the Six Nations. Demba Bomba, who's a tight head prop, and Roman Entomac, of course, famous name. And I suppose at the top end of the sport, what we're also seeing is the re-emergence of Toulouse, and also playing like the old Toulouse. So, you know, it's happening on two fronts, really. So I'm not necessarily confident it's going to translate into something in the Six Nations, but down the line there is hope.
But are they at least on the same wavelength with the national team? Because I got the impression of the last three or four coaches, there were two parts to French rugby and that never the twain should meet sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I think we also have the same problems we have in England, where we have the clubs who are all powerful. They have a long, long season, don't they? They start in the middle of August. This year, they're finishing in the middle of June. So it's a long, long season. And then, of course, caught in between it, we've got Six Nations and we're looking ahead to the World Cup. So for all of these players, it's going to be a pretty long season.
Okay, let's just talk another revival. Scottish clubs, Mark. Glasgow and Edinburgh still really, really in the mix to qualify next Saturday. In fact, Edinburgh could easily, or not easily, but they've got a great chance of qualifying as pool winners, possibly with home tie. Glasgow have got to go to Saracens, which is not very nice, but at least will be competitive and could still categorically go through as a fast loser. Is it been a gradual process over the last 10 years, or is something important clicking in the last sort of 6 months? Because they are now becoming increasingly competitive.
A bit of both, I would say. Certainly from Glasgow's point of view, it has been a gradual process. It was driven first by Sean Lineen and then accelerated by Gregor Townsend and a fantastic group of players. The young guys emerging like at that time, like Stuart Hogg and Finn Russell and Johnny Gray, who have since kicked on. Whereas Edinburgh had been a desperate mess for the best part of a decade until Richard Cockle arrived to give them a bit of direction, a bit of thrust, a bit of identity. And that's really kicked on both last season in the league and then this year in Europe, where they've won four games in a row, which is pretty much unheard of. So Barnsley has been mopping my fevered brow at the prospect of two qualifiers. The entire history of the Heineken / Champions Cup, Scotland's had three appearances in the quarterfinals, now could have two in all at once, so all very exciting.
It is, and Stuart, Richard Cockerell, it always seemed to me rather ironic, because he clearly can offer someone to a club at Edinburgh, which at one stage had a certain softness about them, but he had categorically shot his bolt with an English club. What's the magic that Cockers has taken with him to Edinburgh?
Well, I wouldn't say he shot his bolt, Steve. I think he did a very good job when he went to Leicester. I think he realised after a few years that they had to develop from the 10-man team, that it was his instinctive way to coach as a former front rower. He was very important. He was key in bringing in Aaron Major, which diluted his powers. And I think what happened then, Leicester lost their shape. They became a little bit like Munster did, thinking we can't play the old way. We've got to do something else. And they got caught betwixt the devil and the deep blue sea. And Leicester being Leicester and not very patient. And I think had they stayed with Cockerill and Major as a combination, or just Cockerill, it might have worked. But he learned from that and he understood about the fundamentals, and he's always been a good man manager. He's always had a good eye for a player. So I always felt that wherever he went next, there was no reason why he wouldn't do a very good job. And he's doing a tremendous one in Edinburgh.
Well, first of all, Mark, with Edinburgh, who are the individuals who've, I know it's a team game, but who are the individuals who really come through? Who are the bosses of the team?
Richard Cockerill will make an oft-repeated point that it is very much about the collective, and that's been their strength. But you can break that down into a number of layers. One, the pack has been exceptional. They've got an international front row, and an international front row on the bench as well. Hard work in Boilerhouse. Then you get to the back row, some special players. Hamish Watson, who's been one of the standout open sides in Europe for probably 2 or 3 years now. And then Bill Mata, who I think everybody will have watched countless times trying to work out what the hell it was he actually did with that offload on Saturday night to James Johnson for his try in Toulon. And he's been phenomenally good all year. Rather worryingly, he's had 3 standout performances against French clubs in the Heineken Cup. So you do wonder if some covetous glances will be made in his direction. But he is added the stardust. They've got a couple of international centres to come back in the shape of Matt Scott and Mark Bennett, John Bartley as well, who was their kind of marquee signing last summer, has not played at all. So the rise that they've had this year and last, there's some real quality to come back, so you like to think they can kick on again.
Friday's going to be tough.
It will be tough. We were discussing this earlier on. Toulon, obviously, have had some desperate travails this season. Very soft when they came over to Murrayfield. And again on Saturday, they blew themselves out quite quickly at the Mayol. Albeit, still the only the third time that they've lost there in Europe. So I think they have a hat tip to Edinburgh there. But Montpellier is a different beast, yeah. Particularly when they have that desperation to win.
And Montpellier, at the weekend, beating Newcastle, they rested a few. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be a lorry load of Duplessis coming back.
You know, you've
got the mongrel of Bismarck coming back after a couple of months off. You've got Jacques Duplessis. You've got Nadolo, who was watching in his suit at the weekend. You've got Paul Willemser, who's this new France international, who is starting on the bench. Jan Serfontein. I mean, I remember going back to, I think it was December last season, when Montpellier had to win when they went to Scotland. That's went to Glasgow on a bitterly cold night at Scotstoun, and they bullied them and they beat Glasgow, and Glasgow slightly beat themselves. But I get a sense that there's going to be the same mindset with Cotter and that Montpellier team, who are doing poorly in France and are looking for a day to turn around their season.
Charming, the Olympian. Yeah. We just get the atmosphere building for Scotland.
Hang on.
Olympian, the top walk has knocked it back.
No, I think the point there, though, is that Edinburgh are not Glasgow, I think. The Glasgow pack have not had their troubles to seek in the last couple of years. I absolutely take the point that it's a different level altogether from Toulon, but Cocker was literally, and I mean literally, rubbing his hands when asked about that on Saturday night, because his pack has gone toe-to-toe with anyone, really. With Nell, Schumann, a couple of exceptional props, McInally, it's been good. I think it will be a battle, but battles are the things that they've come out on top in.
Steve, I was going to say, I think Edinburgh will win, and I don't think it'll be a battle. I think they'll win comfortably. I think Montpellier are a club of overpaid players who do not fight because they don't have the identity. Edinburgh have an identity. Edinburgh have a shape. I thought Edinburgh's second half at Toulon was one of the best 40 minutes I've seen in Europe. Montpellier have done nothing to suggest they can beat that. And that Glasgow thing, last year, Glasgow were appalling in Europe. They were weak up front. Mark makes the point, Edinburgh's pack are much stronger. I really think, Martin, that Edinburgh will win this game comfortably.
Just go, we have the, everybody's at the party here, every country, and enjoying themselves. France, Scotland, Ireland, England not at the party at the moment, Stuart, apart from Saracens, who obviously can never beat. What's happened to the England challenge this year?
I don't think it's this year, Steve. I think I wrote it in the Times on Monday morning. I think if you look back over the 20-odd years of European rugby, I think when you get to 2008, 2009, Munster and Leinster winning it back-to-back, you start to see this Irish provincial thing become influential. And I think the English clubs aren't any worse, but I think the Irish clubs have got a great deal more powerful. You know, there's just four of them as opposed to 12, and I think England and French club rugby are struggling. Toulon are the only team, apart from Toulouse in 2010, to have won it from France, but they won it because they had this, you know, this appetite for global superstars. Now, Leinster have got this fantastic academy. They've got a you know, most of the Irish team. Scotland, we're seeing it doing it now. I think from an English perspective, we just, when you've got 12 teams and 14 teams in the case of England and France, they are going to find it very hard to be as competitive. And Saracens are the one. You look at Saracens, they've got Funapola brothers, they've got Itoje, and they've got Farrell. That's the core of the England team. You look at the rest of the English team, and there's sort of smatterings here and there. It's not that England haven't done very well that surprises me. What will surprise me is if in the next few years England get many more than one, possibly two quarter finalists.
Yeah, but don't forget, it's only 3 years ago where people were saying, God, Ireland are never going to be back in this again.
No,
Saracens are going to dominate. In fact, I've got another theory, which I actually wrote to general abuse in Rugby World 2 years ago, and that is that the French and the English leagues are now becoming so colossal that it is no longer the step up it once was for the English. And I don't think, given them, I think in the old days, if you said you can get to the final of Europe or you can get to the final of English, I think they would have said Europe every time. At the moment, I'm not so sure, because financially, to be great in Europe doesn't bring them much.
It's still the case in France, isn't it? I mean, Toulouse have always got Europe. Clermont started getting a grip on it 10 years ago.
Racing,
I think, more
focused.
Recently, Racing as well.
Heavily.
They're focused on it, but are I they? Still, I think they are. But I still think that the lure of the top 14, and particularly when you've got 26 rounds of matches, and then you've got potentially three knockout rounds. I mean, it's a tough old season, and I think many of the French clubs do prioritise that. And to a slightly lesser extent, I think that's happening in England.
Okay, let's just talk some specific games. Wasps are at home to Leinster. This weekend, Leinster needs something from it, and then Toulouse play Bath in Toulouse. So that would seem to be a formality. Perhaps Wasps can just raise themselves once. There are some signs of it, and do themselves some damage to it. Do Leinster some damage?
I think Wasps have got more chance than Bath. I don't think Bath have got a prayer in Toulouse. I think Toulouse at home will come away with four tries there. Wasps, they're not bad, despite their pretty poor record this year. You know, Leinster, they're such a powerful team. You know, this is a team of grand slammers. If they have to dig deep, they'll find a way to win this game. I cannot see Leinster losing it. I think it could be closer than the game involving Bath to lose, but I don't think it'll be that close.
Edinburgh, Mark, as you know them so well, you favour them to come through this week?
I think they will, yeah.
I mean, they can come through by and with a narrow defeat as well, is that true?
That's right, losing bonus point. But they win the game, and they actually do Glasgow a favour as well. If Edinburgh win on Friday night, any kind of win, both of the Scottish teams will be through before Glasgow, the Alliance Park. And that would also give Edinburgh a home quarter-final, possibly against Munster as the permutation stands, which I think would be a really good contest.
Matt, just tell us about Racing. It's very difficult not to describe them as an enigma, but they've got to beat Scarlets this week, which they surely will, and with a bonus point, puts them in a very commanding position, not only for a home tie in the quarter-final, but given the new regulations this year, they and Saracens got great chances of home ties in the semi-finals. Now,
yeah, I think Racing are probably going to end up second seed, aren't they, behind Saracens. So, I mean, they're well placed. And certainly, I mean, that's a club that's been transformed, moving to this new stadium. I mean, Racing had absolutely everything in place. They had the training centre with the wine fridge on the floor below. I mean, the first club ever to have a sort of wine cellar. But what they didn't have for a number of years...
Riska had one of those, didn't they? Didn't Riska have one?
Yeah, but what they didn't have was a decent home ground. I mean, Colombe was a dreadful place. Sure. But now they've moved on to this synthetic surface, and they are transforming the way they're playing the game. They're a different side altogether.
Stuart, Glasgow, you've picked them up a little bit. Glasgow have to win. Sorry, if they beat Saracens at home, they take the pool title. Is there any way?
None.
Okay.
None at all. I mean, I think Leinster and Saracens are probably a little bit above everyone. And Glasgow played a quarter final there and they got thumped a couple of years ago. And I think the key for Glasgow isn't the game in Barnet. It's what goes on in the capital city of Scotland. And I think Edinburgh will do enough to put them through. I don't think they'll get a bonus point either, because I think Saracens are such a professional bunch. They'll just want to go out there and roll through this game, get another 4 points, get it done.
Gradually, the Saris players have come back. The one man who's not back is the man I regard as their key player, and that's Brad Barrett. And he's still not there. So when he comes back, I think they'll be a team to reckon with.
Right, Steve, can I just say, when you talked about the English clubs focus more on England than Europe, I think that's a very good excuse for a bunch of teams now who, outside of Saracens, simply aren't quite good enough. It's like the Cass syndrome.
We should mention the Challenge Cup. Clermont, obviously dominant at the moment, and it'd be lovely to see them back in the main one next year. Northampton Saints can clearly get through as a fast loser, but every one of Harlequins, Sale, Worcester and Bristol Bears should make the knockout stages. So at least there's something for the fans of those clubs to look out for there. They should make it. Matt, do you still love your European competition?
Absolutely. I think the other game we need to mention, because I think it'll actually have some impact on the way things pan out in the last day, is the game at Welford Road. I mean, Leicester taking on Ulster. Now, I know you smirk, Barnsley.
Just say Martin is a fanatical tiger.
I know you think
tiger.
I drive the supporters' bus. It is a matter of fact that I was born in Leicester. Mm. But Ulster's result at Welford Road, and I think that is a fairly finely balanced fixture, will have impact on how things pan out. Because if Ulster don't get the result they're looking for, their Toulouse are going to be going back to Leinster in the quarterfinals.
Yep.
But Ulster winning, that could change things around a little bit. So I think that's going to be a fixture to keep an eye on.
The other thing is, my negative note I sounded there was not on my behalf. I was speaking to a well-known travel agent yesterday who said that the trend to go and watch a club in Europe is now very much stronger than going to watch your national team. I don't mean in terms of numbers, but the trend is upwards all the time. So it's looking good. And to have two Scots on the fringes really does add something to it.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that's given the Heineken Cup a fair good dusting there. But obviously now it's the very early stages of the build-up for Six Nations, Stuart. Should England be worried that they're not having much of a look in the clubs? And does that affect the national team?
No, I reiterate the point I made about Europe, Steve. I think we've got an era of superpowers. because there are 12 English and 14 French teams, you're not going to get many of them from England or France. That's why I think we're going to go through a lean period in Europe. Saracens are the exception. And whilst Eddie Jones has a dominant Saracens, then he has an England team that can compete with anyone in the same way that while Leinster are doing as they are, Ireland are going to be very hard to beat. And, you know, the Vunipolas are coming back. Farrell, he's not playing brilliantly, but you get the sense he's just ticking over until it starts now. Same with Saracens. And Maro Itoje has just come back. So I think Eddie Jones will be quite relaxed as long as Saracens are doing their bits and pieces. The one thing I would say that has come out of this last month that I think is a massive blow is the fact that a week or so ago we were talking about Sam Underhill being out for the Ireland game. We are now talking about him being out for the Six Nations. Now, that's important for the Six Nations. It's also important further down the line towards Japan because Underhill has shown that he can compete at the very highest level. The one thing he needed was game time at Test Match Rugby. He's not going to get that now before the World Cup, before he plays France and Argentina. And already got fellow journalists saying, well, I think Tom Curry was a better player anyway.
I don't buy
was
that.
Ahead of him. And of course, Tom Curry was ahead of him, but he was only ahead of him because Underhill had got injured. Then Curry got injured, he got his chance back. I think Underhill was threatening to become a world-class player in the area where England have suffered so badly for so long, and I do not think you can underestimate the significance of that blow.
Mark, on a personal note, the team that you cover and follow have been on the verge of something for ages. How difficult has that been when, you know, you just get up there and you just needed two results to have gone past a critical mass point? How difficult has it been? And is this the year?
It's tantalising, because it could have been probably the last three or four. I mean, it's certainly from probably the 2015 World Cup period and on, there's been a steady graph of progress overall, but there's still maybe some key parts of the jigsaw that they haven't quite proved that they exist.
Which ones?
Well, I would say certainly the autumn exposed a bit of a deficiency at the breakdown, and the fact that if teams shut down this high-paced continuity offloading game, stop Scotland getting the ball wide early on, they don't really have those kind of front foot ball carriers, the big kind of beastly guys who can turn it into a different kind of game. So, and also winning away from home is a massive issue. I think since 2002 they've only won once somewhere that isn't Rome in the Six Nations, in Ireland 2010. But and that's where, you know, albeit a much denuded Toulon team or much less than Toulon team from where they've been, the knowledge that comes from winning games like that and the belief that comes from winning games like that away from home, I think will stand those guys in good stead as they go to Twickenham and Paris this year.
Is the nation buying it a bit now? Because for years, you look at the crowns you've got, it looks a bit embarrassing. But actually, it seems to me that the turnstiles are ticking a bit now.
Yeah. I mean, Scotland, I think, have had a great home record the last couple of years. I think England 2016 is the last kind of Six Nations game that they lost there. They've sold out 10 or 11 on the bounce now at Murrayfield, including, you know, Fiji's and Argentina's, which previously had been getting as low as 14,000-15,000. So there is a definite kind of sense of something happening. But again, they have to get over that step from good to very good with the World Cup approaching, and, you know, with a couple of key absentees, Duncan Taylor, Blade Thompson, who was the great white hope at number eight, there's still some gaps there that are going to have to be filled.
Martin, as a student of the French game, are you prepared to go on flat out and say this is the year, because the rest of us are not?
No, I don't think I am. I mean, they have injuries in much the same way that England have had them. I mean, they come here without two wings who may not be involved at all in the Six Nations. Teddy Thomas, who just seems to score tries whenever he plays. Mm. A new name to many. I know it's not new to Barnsley. Oliveretti Rucker, who has been tearing up trees at Clermont for a while. Like Willemse, he now has a French passport, which is what you need to have to play for France these days, not just 3 years of being in the country. I think those two would be your starting wings. They have plenty of injuries elsewhere, and of course their first fixture is against Wales. And I mean, that is a massive fixture, and we know the way the French are. Remember how close they came last year. It was that drop goal from Johnny Sexton right at the death which sunk the French on the opening night. It could have been a different Six Nations for the French, but I know we're indulging in sort of one or two stereotypes here, but you do get a sense that the French maybe are psychologically a little bit fragile. If they do beat Wales on that opening day, that opening evening, then it could be a good Six Nations.
Absolutely.
But bear in mind, they have to travel to Twickenham, they have to travel to Dublin.
Stuart, the vexed question, you and I have discussed loads, 10 for France, 10 for France. Have they finally got one? After you abandoned the great François Trandouk, after telling me he was one of the greatest players ever produced in Europe, you've now abandoned him.
Listeners, there is a degree of exaggeration which I have never heard the like of before. I did think François Trandouk was a better player than you did, and on a rare occasion, I'll hand out that you might have been right about Trandouk. I don't think Jalibert and Bello are the answers either, but for France, their big blow last year was the injury to Camille Lopez, the fly half for Clermont. He's a top-class player. He likes a glass of wine as well, which raises him my esteem. But he can control the game, and France have had absolute absence of control. The key for them is, what are they going to do at scrum half? They've got some riches, but they like Machinot. He is in the squad.
No, he's not. He's going to be Paris.
He's out. So they're going to go.
It's going to be the two Clermont.
So they're going to the Clermont half backs. I think Paris a little bit slow at Test match level. And I think that's a potential vulnerability there. If Parra can crack it with Lopez, then France have a great offloading game. Any team that can leave out Vakatawa from their squad is pretty good. And if you've watched Damien Penaud, you'll see this whole Clermont half-back midfield thing coming into focus. Raka as well. France will play some good rugby, but I still don't think, Steve, they're well enough coached. I don't think they're fit enough, and I don't think they have the belief. And the one country we haven't mentioned is Wales. We said if they beat Wales, it could be so different. If Wales win that opening day, they've got Ireland and England at home. We could be looking at a Welsh Grand Slam, despite the fact that their four regions have been pretty appalling.
They have. That just shows you don't have to be do it week in, week out. But we're going to have a good look at Wales next week when the rug comes back on Monday. And but I do agree. Just one thing: as I came in today, someone said to me, "Are you going to cover the latest safety issue and an injury issue?" That was when the RFU together, and this is in the light of four recent deaths in France. Martin, which cast a pall over everything, and you know, you pray for the lads and their families and everything, and to keep everybody else safe at least. But last week, the RFU Premier Rugby Limited and the RPA, the Players Association, put out a massive document in which was said to be a huge blow for safety. It was a monumental piece. It had all sorts of measures, theories, it had statistics, evidence-based stuff so that the game would be safer. What it did not have in any one of its nooks and crannies was any suggestion once that as many as one game should not be played in the overall packed fixture list, which shows to me, I'm not knocking out the financial and I'm not knocking the medical people who helped in this report, but no one will give up £1 for safety. No one will call out off a game, and if there are fewer games, I can tell you without my medical background, there will be fewer injuries and less training. So that got my goat, as you probably noticed. Okay, well, now we move on to the key individual award, God or Goddess of the Week. And Mark, just before you choose, you reveal the identity of yours, which will be put to me as the chairman for scrutiny. What are you up to this week, rugby-wise? Where will you be entertaining the Sunday Times readers from?
I do believe I'm going to be carrying your bags at Saracens Glasgow at the weekend, Steve.
Ah, assistant. You get an assistant.
A glamorous assistant, no less.
I didn't know that. That's first one. Fantastic. Okay, well, blimey, he's almost naturalised now.
Indeed.
Okay, I get a lieutenant. That's fantastic. And your god or goddess of the week?
I'm going to go with the simple choice for me and straightforward is going to be Richard Cockerell for giving us something else to write about that's positive up north and injecting life into what was a very moribund club and taking them a considerable distance in a short space of time, and also emerging within about 5 minutes to speak to me on Friday and Saturday night when we're on a tight deadline in Toulon. So
fantastic.
An all-round good egg.
Well, he's got a head shaped like an all-round good egg, to be fair. Okay, Martin, god or goddess of the week?
Well, I'm bound to mention my old mate Albertus Buckle, Bertie Buckle. You may well have seen him in the game between Lyon and Saracens. He came off the bench. He stuck a stud in the shin of Will Skelton, and not happy with having done that, he turned it through 90 degrees. Now, I think you're bound to respect a man who manages to avoid a red card for doing that. But let's put him to one side for a moment. I mean, I don't think Barnes agrees with me. You think I'm going a bit soft, don't you?
You've gone very soft. I think it's the way Moses hammered you. Your head's never been right since.
Because there was also an incident there, the Scott Berger one, yeah. Which I mean, on a serious note, I almost went all Kent Walton for a moment. I mean, that was a sort of Mick McManus
Kent
dump
Walton.
On his head, wasn't it? I mean, yeah. This is World of Sport and Fred Dinage, isn't it? But that...
Just hang on a second. Well, Kent Walton, to all our younger listeners...
Anyone under 50.
He was the man who used to commentate on the London wrestling, not the WWE and all that sort of stuff, but Mick McManus, Steve Logan, Johnny Quango, Billy Two Rivers...
Giant Haystacks.
No, he was slightly after,
Big,
I think.
Big Giant. Daddy? Big Daddy?
Big Daddy was in it. Well, I think he was Big Granddaddy at that time. But
His name was Shirley Crabtree.
Yeah.
That was his real name.
And do you know what? A friend of mine called Chris Hewitt once met Shirley Crabtree's son and said, "Is your name Shirley Crabtree as well?" And Shirley Crabtree Jr. did not take it at all well. Exit Hewitt.
Let's get back to my God of the Week. I'm going to give it to.
Is Mick McManus?
No. Oh. I mean, Barnsley's mentioned the influence of Saracens and the influence there should be on the England side. There's one guy there who is another former world champion. He was in the same team as Maro Itoje back in 2014. He's the most improved player, I think, in the Premiership, close to this season. He scored two tries yesterday against Lyon. He's a thoroughly grounded, decent fella. I think he's the sort of fella who would benefit and would benefit England by being in the squad. He's a potential World Cup bolter, Nick Tompkins.
That's very good. He did get big raps from commentators. Oh, sorry, it was you. No, he did. He got big raps, Nick Tompkins. I think he played very well. And I think that's
and he
good,
does
that's
week
good.
In, week out.
Yeah, OK. Right.
In a star-studded lineup.
I don't think he's that improved. I think he's a really good
Hang
player
on,
last
whose god
year.
Is this? It's not your god, it's
No,
Martin.
I'm just saying, I don't think he's that improved. I think he's a pretty good player last year. I saw that game.
Right, that's typical Barnes.
I saw that game in Auckland. Mine, you hate this name, but Munster, they were so efficient against Gloucester. It was a tidal wave that came and came and came again. It was so impressive. But it can be pretty boring, this pick and go, when it's got to 35 times. And I was watching the game and thinking, blimey, they're good at keeping the ball, but there's got to be more to life than this. Cue Joey Carberry. If you have a team that is just about ball control, you need somebody who's got a little bit of magic. And this kid Carberry has it. Try that he made for Andrew Conway, where he stepped off his right leg and chipped with his left, was magnificent. And it's a long time now since Munster had a fly half. They've missed the influence of O'Gara. It might just be, all these years on, they've got their man in Joey Carberry. He's my God of the Week.
That's fine, but three very strong ones there. Would you all please leave the room while I give this some consideration? Yeah, to be honest, there were three great ones there, but I am going to give it to Carberry because it depended on Carberry as to whether Munster were going to be good or average this year, because no one knew if he could do it every week, and it's off to a good start. I have to say, though, Cocker's to transform a near moribund club, Tompkins to come through so well, they're three good ones, probably the three best that we've had. So God of the Week goes to Joey Carberry of Munster. That'll do us for the rut today. Just a final question. Mark, have you got a book out recently? Recent?
In the pipeline.
But it's not out yet.
It's not yet.
Mark, have you got a book out coming out?
Not this week.
No, I've not got a book out coming. Has anyone got a book coming out?
No, let's go.
Wow. Have you got one, Barnsley? 7th of February, Sketches from Memory. I do, as you should ask, Steve, yes.
Sketches from Memory by Stuart Barnes. And we are going to talk more about that because on Thursday, Stuart and I are going to be together. I'm going to put all the accusations that you've all made about him straight to him, about the way he left Wales behind in the lurch, but also a book which is very, very singular. It's like no book I've ever read. Stuart will be talking to us about that as well. He and I just chewing the fat about rugby, controversies, journalism, and all sorts of things like that. Thanks so much for listening and downloading us. We'll be back on Thursday this week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.